This is We Met You When, a podcast by journalism students at Toronto Metropolitan University. We go back in time, dig up news stories from 2013, and track down the people in those stories.
So that sound has always stuck with me. And it's one of those things that I'll continue to carry with me, not to get too dark and deep, but it's one of those things that I still can hear, even 10 years later.
We want to know what happened after their names were in the news.
I sat down at the piano and I remember trying to play. And then after like 2 minutes, I just like broke down into tears because I felt like I had lost so much of my abilities, my technique, my, you know, everything I had worked for.
But we have managed to fill in some of the gaps, but there are still many mysteries, and we're so pleased that the Allison project has lasted all these 10 years.
That really started my career in doing social work with people living with dementia.
Some were teens when they were interviewed, others were adults. No one was in a position of power, but many of them felt the power a news story can have.
And I'd say, unfortunately, probably for the first couple interviews after that I gave, I think I was higher in anxiety, just kind of anticipating like, oh no, what are they gonna say? Like it, you know, kind of maybe a little bit distrustful.
I connected with it on somewhat of a personal level. And then, but I never thought that it would actually like get to this stage where it is now. And seeing that like evolution is really crazy.
We're exploring the difference a decade makes and the difference we journalists can make going forward by first going back to 2013. I'm Anna Maria Mubayad. You're listening to We Met You When, Season 2. This is Coco's Key Change.
It was just a really, really horrible day and horrible night. I remember being in the hospital and being too scared to call my parents. And by scared, I don't mean like I thought they were going to be mad, but I just didn't know how it would affect them. So the first person I actually called was my piano teacher to let him know that I was not going to be able to do my recital.
Coco Ma has loved piano since long before she could play, and her parents could see it.
When I was a baby, they gave me a lot of like piano-related toys, and I was super into them. We had a couple of family friends who had daughters who were around my age, and they all played piano. So at every, you know, family friend get together, they would start playing, and I apparently was quite envious of this.
It wasn't long before Coco Ma moved on from toy pianos.
So when I was around 5.5 years old, I believe that's when my parents first took me to a piano store and had me choose my very first piano.
She remembers holding her dad's hand, walking through aisles of shiny grand pianos and upright pianos with different colors. She had to climb up the piano stool to get to the keys. It was all very exciting. Coco's talent shined through from the start, and she advanced quickly.
I began learning, and my first teacher actually, after about 6 months, she said, "I can't teach you anymore. I think you need to go find another teacher." And so we ended up going to the Royal Conservatory in Toronto when I was 6.
The Royal Conservatory of Music in Toronto was founded more than 130 years ago. It's a center for music education that boasts more than 5 million alumni. Many of them are Canadians who achieve international acclaim in the music industry. Glenn Gould, Oscar Peterson, Sarah McLachlan, Diana Krall, David Foster. As Coco advanced in piano, she became a fan of Long Long, a Chinese pianist who is considered one of the greatest pianists of the 21st century. Coco was 7 years old when she first saw him perform live.
I just loved him as a pianist, and I do still love him as a pianist so much. And so I just really, really wanted to play for him.
And eventually, she did. When Long Long hosted a junior music camp in Munich in 2013, 12 kids were chosen from around the world, and Coco was one of them, the only one from Canada. And that made news.
This is Coco Ma. She's just 13 years old, and she's just warming up.
That 2013 news story caught my attention. I'm a musician too, a violinist, and I was curious. I wanted to know, what did she do next? Where is Coco now? So I reached out to her. Turns out she now lives in the United States. That international experience with Long Long left a strong impression.
I really wanted to be performing for audiences all around the world. I did a lot of performing in Canada. That was like my favorite thing to do, highlight of all those hours of practicing. So it was really a joy to kind of experience different cultures and meet people.
At age 15, Coco set her sights on the Juilliard School in New York City.
So my family actually moved to New York City, which was an incredible, crazy experience.
Juilliard is one of the most prestigious music schools in the world, the one so many movie and TV characters try to get into. The acceptance rate is about 7%. Few people actually get in. Coco is one of them.
Juilliard was just a really big part of, like, everything for me. Just being so mind blown that I was there and taking classes and... A big part of my, I think, pianistic career was studying with Veda Kaplinsky, who's the head of the piano department.
Coco was eager to play big and advanced pieces, but Veda Kaplinsky made it clear Coco needed to start slow.
She only let me play a single etude. It was the Opus 10, number 8 by Chopin in F major. One hand for 3 months. And my parents were livid. Because you can imagine, like, them, like, uprooting their lives and sending me off to Juilliard and, you know. And then they're like, what are you playing? Like, which competitions will we be going to? Like, et cetera, et cetera. What are the big things you're learning? And I'm like, I'm playing one etude, one hand for the next, like, for the foreseeable future, actually.
As a violinist, I can relate. We practice everything extremely slowly. It's incredibly annoying. The amount of times I've heard slowly and with a metronome. But it helps. It helps make sure I develop muscle memory consciously and correctly. Because playing an instrument isn't supposed to hurt.
Physiologically, I was doing a lot of things that were aggravating, like, my tendons and my muscles and my joints and stuff like that. I know I can't show this, like, over an audio recording, but basically, like, one of the ideas is that you want to be able to have your hand, like, relatively straight so that your wrist isn't, like, bending at really severe, awkward angles while you're playing, like, super powerfully, because that puts so much strain on your wrist.
Those techniques Coco learned at Juilliard prepared her for what came next. Yale.
Yeah.
Coco got into the Yale School of Music certificate program. This is equivalent to a master's, and she was 18. Then, 2 weeks before her senior recital,
I got a text from her that she had had a problem, and so I wrote back, but then I didn't hear back from her for a while, so I had a bit of a panic attack that I wasn't sure what had happened. And I finally tracked her down to find out that she had had this accident.
Derek Green is one of Coco's professors, and he was worried. The accident meant she wouldn't be able to perform at her final recital. Coco had to take a break. And accepting that wasn't easy.
I sat down at the piano and I remember trying to play. And then after like 2 minutes, I just like broke down into tears because I felt like I had lost so much of my abilities, my technique, my, you know, everything I had worked for like, I guess 14, 15 years, something like that. Slowly, I began practicing again at the encouragement of like my professors and my peers. But one problem was that I was having like a lot of pain while I was playing. So even sitting down and practicing for like 15 to 30 minutes, I would have to like totally stop, not even just like take a break, like walk around. Like it was like an unbearable pain. But I mean, like I still had to finish my recital, so I was taking Advil painkillers for every single session before every single lesson, because I knew I had to get through it.
This is what she'd been training for since she was a kid. Sitting down at the piano is different now.
I'm in a little bit of denial still from the accident. The fact is that I can't practice anywhere near as much as I used to.
She may practice piano less, but her creativity and talent has no limit. Back in high school, when Coco was auditioning for Juilliard, she started writing. A lot.
My first year, I had written like an arrangement for concert band. The second year, I decided I would write a series of short stories. And I started writing the first one, and it just kept getting longer and longer and longer. And I realized I had about 50,000 words and like half a story left to tell. So that's basically a book. So I decided maybe I should, even after the project had ended and I had submitted like what I had, that maybe I would try and finish the thing and get it published.
She wanted to publish a book while going to Juilliard. Coco says her parents weren't exactly thrilled.
Even an hour was like, an hour spent writing was an hour not spent practicing. So they thought it was a little bit silly. They thought it wasn't feasible. It wasn't like worthwhile. I remember saying to my mom, you know, like, okay, you won't say those things once I find an agent. And then so she said, okay, then find an agent. And then I found an agent. And then she said, And I said, okay, you won't say those things once I find a publisher. And then I found a publisher and then got the book published and everything. And she was like, I don't know about this. And then the check came in the mail and she was like, okay. I mean, I say that like jokingly, but like also, of course, like a parent wants to know that their child will be able to succeed, like especially in this economy.
That book Coco got published is called Shadowfrost, a young adult fantasy novel. It is a loose retelling of Snow White, where the princess has a sword and is on a mission to kill a demon that's terrorizing the kingdom. Coco worked on the book with Blackstone, an independent publishing house based in Oregon.
I definitely felt nervous about, you know, being like a teenager working with like professionals in the industry. But they were, you know, they were very respectful, and I had a really great experience.
Coco continued writing all throughout her time at Juilliard and Yale. By the time of the accident, she had published a sequel to Shadowfrost and another book called Godstorm. As she was recovering, during those 6 months where she couldn't play piano, Coco turned even more of her creative energy toward writing.
I do think the novel, right, or the fiction writing really helped her kind of, you know, deal with and process that serious accident and the injury to her hand. So she had to have, you know, pins put into her fingers, and so that was very, I think that was really scary to her. And I remember having several discussions in which she realized that writing would help her ride the months out that she would have to endure, not only not being able to play, but wondering if her hand would ever be able to come back to the ability that she had.
Coco was in Derek's TV script writing class. After almost every class, they'd spend an hour, or even more, discussing plot details and scenes for her book.
And sometimes he would just sit there, and I would just talk at him, bouncing off idea after idea after idea. And he would say nothing, and before he could like even reply, I would be like contradicting myself and be like, wait, no, I thought of something better. This one's not gonna work, but this might work. Oh, what about this? And just having him like as a sounding board was so helpful.
And then it kind of just evolved from there. It never was like we agreed that I would be her mentor and she would be my mentee, but it certainly kind of worked out that way over the months and years that she wrote the book. She's very open to criticism. An interesting little story is that when we first started working, I asked her, do you want me to read these pages the way I would an undergraduate, which is a fair, you know, in a kind of a nurturing way and supportive way and encouraging, or would you prefer that I read them like my professional writer friends, when we send each other and we kind of tear it apart and work hard to make it better. And you can imagine what Coco said. She was like, oh, definitely the second.
Coco finished writing her fourth book, Nightbreaker. It was published in September 2023 through Penguin Random House. Writing young adult novels, YA novels, has become a passion.
So YA is kind of a strange, like, niche, like, subgenre kind of thing. So I was looking for an agent who had a little more relationships with editors who were specifically looking for YA titles. And so I landed on Holly Root at Root Literary, who is also the agent of my favorite author, V.E. Schwab. I only had the first chapter of my new series, and usually when you query to agents, you need to have a full manuscript, like done, polished, and ready to go. But I was kind of in like a really awkward place in my career, and I felt like I just wanted to give it a shot at least. And so I was super honest to her, and she actually got back to me super quickly. And she was like, I love this concept. This chapter is kick-ass. I wanna see what you can do. So she gave me a shot and I finished the book. And then we did a couple rounds of edits and she sent it off. It was so exciting. I mean, Penguin picked it up, which I was really thankful for. And it was definitely like a big check mark on my list of dream things to do, kind of, yeah, publishing with a publisher like Penguin. Having a creative outlet was like really, really important. Obviously, like it can't replace piano in any way, but I do listen to a lot of music when I'm writing, and it definitely still serves as like a really big inspiration for me.
The structures in big sonatas and large pieces composed for piano inform Coco's writing.
There's lots of overlap between, you know, what makes a good performer. Writing has a performative element. It also involves lots of rote, lots of doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over. She she found a way to make the two communicate with each other, or to kind of each nourished the other endeavor, if that makes sense. So writing made her a better musician, music made her a better writer.
Derek says that Coco's vision for her book came to life because she is so determined.
So many talented people who want to be a writer give up, and then you can't do it. And Coco just does not give. It doesn't occur to her, it seems to me. So it hurts? Well, I'll take Advil. My fingers were shattered in an accident? Well, let's have them. Let's see what they can do to put them back together. It didn't occur to her to quit.
It's really important to pursue your passions. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to do it in a way where you're kind of switching cold turkey. And I mean, I wasn't planning to switch careers in the first place, but it was definitely baby steps, like little steps. Because sometimes you don't know if what you think you want to do is actually what you want to do, or actually what you think it was made up to be. Like, something might not live up to the hype kind of idea. But I think being open to feedback and to trying new things and to taking risks is really important. Like, all of that stuff.
That sounds so different from where she was at in 2013. You sent me the video from the CBC interview from 10 years ago, and in there you get asked the question if you feel like you were born to do this. And you say very confidently, you're like, yes. Do you still think that's true?
I think it's shifted a bit. So I think that I would say I can be born to do anything that I put my mind to.
We Met You When is a production by journalism students from the Creative School at Toronto Metropolitan University. This episode was produced by Mia Johnson, Mana Husseini, and me, Anna Maria Mubayad. Mixing for this episode by Mia Johnson. Sound design by me. Sherry Okeke is our executive producer and professor. Angela Glover is our director of audio production. Our season 2 graphic was created by Mana Husseini. Web design by Daniela Olariu. The music in this episode was recorded for this episode thanks to pianists Aisha Chariar, Nazli Ghanarunian, and Coco Ma. Special thanks to Juleika Lantigua, founder of LWC Studios, for her support during our pitching process. And thank you to the Creative School for the Curriculum Innovation Grant that made Juleika's participation possible. I'm Anna Maria Mubayad. Thanks for listening.